Well, from all reports, people wait for it patiently for Sunday to roll around so they can listen to The Good Doctor on the Better Health Radio Show. Well, that time is now here. So let's say good evening to Dr. Renee Boyce, and she is your host for the Better Health Radio Show. Good evening, Doc.
Good evening.
And she has her guest as usual.
Yes, I'm going to introduce my guest a little later on. He's been here before, and this evening promises to be a wonderful evening. I don't remember if I said good evening, did I?
But I think you did.
Good afternoon.
Oh, okay, mm-hmm. Yes. But welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. I had a very interesting weekend.
Tell us all about it, good doctor.
Well, first of all, I touched 9 of our 11 parishes yesterday.
And you found them?
I wasn't driving.
Okay.
And they did not include St. Andrew or St. Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
But all the other
You're welcome to St. Andrew anytime, by the way.
Oh, okay, fine. When I get there.
Mm-hmm. If you can find it. Yeah, but go ahead. Don't let me stop you.
We're already at 4 minutes past the hour of 6. I am not going to allow you to steal any of the show today. And the other thing that happened was... I'm trying to choose my words ever so carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that these words that follow are the express opinion of the speaker only, and they are not the opinion of the Voice of Barbados or any station of the StarCom
network. So I sense a growth coming.
It is.
All right, here we go.
Earlier this week, I had the misfortune of being involved in a motor vehicle accident.
But you're fine, right?
I'm fine. Good. There were no injuries, and... my vehicle was struck whilst it was at rest. Let's just put it that way. Okay.
You're a darling.
However, I had the misfortune, displeasure, discomfort. I can't think of any other words to butt up upon the most ill-mannered, unprofessional, uncouth.
I think you're doing quite fine. Looking for words. But go ahead.
Police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
That has ever, I believe, walked the face of this country.
Mm-hmm.
Days after the encounter, I still have in the back of my throat...
You're still seething. Like,
the displeasure. And it's not necessary. His behavior was unnecessary. And I think it is a poor reflection on the good men and women who serve, who protect, who reassure... in our National Police Service. I am one of the biggest fans of the Royal Barbados Police Force Band. I was actually going to join the police force band. That's how bad it is, right? I really do love the Royal Barbados Police Force Band.
Mm-hmm.
And my children and I, we went to the tattoo on Friday night. Oh, that was so wonderful. To see the police officers coming out of their serious element and doing something to entertain the public. Juxtaposed to the misfortune that I had days in front, I can't believe it.
Do you wish to tell me exactly what happened in a nutshell?
No.
You don't?
Because I can't.
Because you can't.
I cannot tell you in a nutshell because we only have 54 minutes left. I can give you verbatim the misfortune and unpleasantness that I endured in that encounter.
Mind you, listeners, I haven't been told a story yet, so I'm hearing it just for the first time like you see. He was very unpleasant, wasn't he?
Public sector reform clearly did not work on him, and it was unnecessary. I think that is my biggest source of contention. You do not have to be ill-mannered to be authoritative.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, he is not the typical police officer. Throughout my years, I've encountered police officers for different things, and none of them has been so unpleasant.
Well, you see, you have a grouse and you're unwilling to say exactly what happened because you don't want to sully the good name of the officers.
Exactly.
But I am one of these people that will tell you straight out, I've experienced the same kind of behavior you have experienced. In fact, the gentleman said to me, they got complaints committee in Bridgetown.
Oh, my goodness me.
If you want complaints.
But that's exactly what.
Use it. He told me that. I'd like to or not.
Oh, my goodness gracious me. But that's what they do. You could go along and complain. You could.
Wow. And I can give you several other stories about our good officers that we have, that some of them, like, I cannot believe what they were thinking at the time. One threatened to arrest me. I lied to you not. He threatened to arrest me. Okay. And you know what was my infraction?
You were speeding?
Because I said to him, and your name is?
Oh, you had to ask that too? Oh, my goodness
gracious. I said, and your name is?
Maybe we need to stop.
And my mom went off on a tirade, threatened to arrest me. Mind you, and all that, he'd not asked me for my documents as yet. Mm-hmm. My license, driver's insurance, nothing at all he's asked me for yet. But he threatened to arrest me because I asked him who he was. And I said it just like that. And your name is? Mm-hmm. Boy, who told me say so?
Exactly. We probably anyway. Made the same error. Nevertheless, this is not what the Better Health Radio Show is.
It's not Down to Brass Tacks.
Maybe I should call into Down to Brass Tacks. What time is Down to Brass Tacks?
It's tomorrow, every morning from 10.
From 10?
Midweek mornings.
Maybe I should call
Monday to Friday
and air my groceries on the correct station. I just had to get it off my chest so that I could.
I can see it on your face. Don't worry about it, Doc. They're not all like that, trust me.
That is what I'm going to say. The vast majority, I can't put a percentage on it, but the vast majority of police officers that I've had the pleasure to encounter, I mean, it was wonderful. It was so bad, right? One time, my car was leaking coolant near the Black Rock Police Station.
Our good old
and
car.
It wasn't my car. It was a car that I was driving, and I couldn't get the hood open. So I remember that their motto is to serve, protect, and reassure. And seeing as how I needed service, I needed her protection because Dart was falling, and I needed reassurance because I had to get from Black Rock to St. Lucie, I went across to the Black Rock Police Station. And I said to the officer, I quoted the motto, and I said, I need some help, sir. And lo and behold, one of them came out and helped me. And I later discovered that he was one of the ones that wear KK. He was in his own clothes. So it wasn't even a low, well, I don't want to say low, but a junior
ranking.
Officer.
I understand what you're saying.
Right. Mm-hmm. To think that he would come and put coolant in my engine for me. So shout out to all the officers at the Black Rock Police Station. Nevertheless, let us go.
Yes,
let's go.
Before you stay, remember you said,
she
said we have 54 minutes, Doc.
Right,
so
we are at 50 minutes. So now we are in with Dr. John Barker. We've had John here several times before, and John is an obstetrician gynecologist. Hello, good evening, my dear.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Oh, dear, I said my dear.
That is quite fine. We understand.
Yes, today we are going to be talking about preterm labor, and a little later on in the show, there's going to be a little twist to our discussion. And let us jump right in, since I've already stolen 11 minutes ranting, I'm going to start. So, since we're talking about preterm labor, I figure the best thing for us to define, first of all, John, is labor.
Right.
What is labor?
Right. Labor is the onset of regular uterine contractions.
Yes! And the reason I say that is because everybody knows that I do not like OMG. So in preparation for the show, I said, I'm going to see if I can remember the definition of labor. And I was right.
Right. So you get the onset of regular uterine contractions leading to
the
progressive dilatation and
of the cervix.
Of the cervix, correct.
With
delivery of the baby.
Of the baby.
Yeah. And... Right, so
my teacher should be proud.
Yeah. Right.
So that's what labor is. So one of the problems I found that patients have and persons have asked me, how is it that we say pregnancies are 9 months, but it's 40 weeks? Because from my calculation, a month is 4 weeks, 9 4s are 36.
Yeah, essentially it's 280 days, which if you... divide out by 30, it gives you 9.3 months, roughly.
So a full-term pregnancy is 40 weeks?
Well, 40 weeks is your due date.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but a full-term pregnancy, the upper limit would be 42 weeks. Right? So in terms of a term pregnancy, is from 37
mm-hmm.
weeks to 42 weeks.
From 37 to 42. 42. So if you go into labor anytime between 37 and 42,
that's
you've
fine.
Had a full-term
full-term pregnancy.
Yeah.
Mm. But they have divided out into like early term, mid-term and stuff. But for simplicity, between 37 and 42 weeks.
You see, that's the problem with medicine, right? Specializing and micro-specializing and micro-micro-specializing. So we will go with the basics. Term between 37 to 42 weeks.
Yeah.
So by extension, therefore, preterm has to be anything before.
So preterm would be like from 24 weeks to 37 weeks. Or 36 and 6.
Okay, so 24 weeks is our national here?
Well, no. Wait. 24 weeks is UK.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here would be between 26 to 28 weeks. And it all depends on the level of care that you'll be able to get from the special care baby unit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But sorry. NICU.
Yes, we understand, and yeah, I see yeah. you. And again, we have to say hello to all the doctors and nurses of the neonatal intensive care unit. It is, unless you've been there, unless you've seen the babies, unless you've seen the pain etched on the faces of those parents, mm-hmm. you can't understand.
Yeah, it's not easy
time. It's not. So those nurses and doctors who dedicate themselves to working in such a touch-and-go, I believe, mm-hmm, touch-and-go mm-hmm, area, mm-hmm. It takes a special heart to do that. For me, when I was doing the rotations on NICU, you cried sometimes. You cried sometimes when you saw these little things fighting for their lives. And that's essentially what they're mm-hmm. doing. They're fighting for their lives. So when you discharge a baby from NICU, there is no feeling mm-hmm. like that at all.
I agree.
No feeling like that. And this phone, I dropped my phone, or my phone dropped from me several times. It has a mind of its own. You see, this is why I like pen and paper. Do you think that the pen and paper are going to drop from me, Greg? I said, no, they're not. So let's talk about pre-dates and post-dates. So we're trying to get the foundation.
Okay, yeah. Post-dates would be after your due date, which should be 40 weeks.
Okay, and who determines or what determines the due date?
Right, the due date is from your last menstrual period. However, most women might not have regular periods. They might have irregular periods. So what we usually do is a dating scan at around 12 weeks gestation. And that what that does is take out the errors for the last menstrual period and stuff. And that will give you the exact due date via a scientific method, which is the standard in relation to what your due date would be. And the importance of it is that once you have a dating scan, it will decrease the amount of post-date pregnancies that you will have.
And what are some of the problems that we can encounter with a post-date pregnancy?
Right.
Though we're talking about preterm labor.
Yes, yes. Once the pregnancies go over 42 weeks is when you get issues. So the placenta starts to shut down. So the baby actually decreases in size. In addition to that, you get what you call meconium being formed. The meconium is basically stool from the baby. And what happens is that sometimes the baby can swallow it, and you can get something called meconium aspiration syndrome. This can be reversible. However, sometimes it can be like a plug which blocks off your windpipe, so the baby is actually asphyxiated. So you will get a poor outcome, or sometimes your risk of stillbirth actually increases tremendously over 42 weeks. So that's why we try to get people delivered by 42 weeks.
So one of the instructive points from today's teaching would be for those ladies, especially if you're thinking about having children, would be to chart your menstrual periods. It would give a good idea. It's not like 100% foolproof, but it would give us a good idea of dates and so on. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I found that persons wanted to get would be to get an ultrasound as soon as they found out that they were pregnant.
That is a viability scan and not a dating scan. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of that scan, it would be to confirm the pregnancy is intrauterine, one, and two, to verify that there is a heartbeat.
Okay, so when we say intrauterine, sometimes pregnancies can end up places that they really shouldn't,
in the abdomen.
So an ideal situation is that the pregnancy is inside the uterus.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
So that's the reason for getting an early scan. Does everybody need an early scan?
No, because sometimes some people might bleed and stuff. So you have what you call a threatened miscarriage. So the actual scan will be made to actually confirm the viability.
So we're talking about preterm labor this evening on the Better Health Radio Show. So what are some of the causes for preterm labor? Why would one woman have a wonderful pregnancy all the way up to term and then somebody else's pregnancy is interrupted by early labor?
It's what you call the luck of the draw.
You are going to look at a grown woman.
No. I'm going to go through all of the causes of it. But, you know, some people are fortunate to go all the way through. Some people might not because of varying reasons. Actually, about 10 to 15% of all of all deliveries are preterm. And the reason why it is important is because of the increase, what we call perinatal morbidity and mortality.
All right, so we are going to break that down. Perinatal means?
Perinatal means, well, when the baby delivers, mm-hmm. yeah. The morbidity would be like stuff like sometimes because the lungs aren't developed and stuff, the baby might not be getting enough oxygen. Sometimes it can get bleeds in the bowels, sometimes it can get bleeds in the brain as well if you are preterm. And depending on how bad they are, then that's when the mortality comes in, because that's when you get the actual demise of the baby.
So whilst we're going through our show, our hearts do go out to all of those women who have had preterm labor and have lost babies. It cannot be easy at all to carry a pregnancy a certain way, even maybe a couple weeks, mm-hmm. and all the way down to 30 weeks, 35 weeks, all the way down to term. And then at the end, there is no baby to hold. Mm-hmm. So yes. Our hearts do go out to those ladies and gentlemen, because sometimes we think that only the women.
Oh, no, it's the whole family.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it is the whole family, because this, you would have started preparing a nursery, mm-hmm. would have bought baby clothes, and then there's nothing. You don't get that opportunity. So let's go through some of the causes for preterm labor.
Right. Sometimes it is what you call idiopathic, meaning that there's no reason for it. It just happens, yeah? And that's the one of the most common reasons for it. You can have a previous preterm labor. Previous preterm labor predisposes you to, once you get pregnant again, to another pregnancy, which is at higher risk for preterm labor. So if you had two preterm labors, it's more than definite the third one would actually be a preterm delivery. Sometimes you can get trauma, like if somebody hits you on your tummy and you get a bleed on your tummy. That's called an abruption. That can cause you to go into preterm labor. Sometimes if you have a bladder infection, depending on how bad it is, because sometimes you can get very bad kidney infections. Pyelonephritis is what you call a kidney infection, and that can make you go into labor. Sometimes if you have multiple pregnancies, rarely they will go more than 38 weeks, but most of the time they will go into labor before 36 weeks. Yeah. Sometimes as well, the obstetricians might have to intervene, like if you have a serious medical problem, like preeclampsia. If you're diabetic, and sometimes if your insulin requirement is decreasing, that might point to a bad outcome, because the actual placenta is shutting down. So then they might actually have to induce it earlier as well. And if you're taking drugs like cocaine and stuff, or smoking, that can increase the chances of preterm labor.
Please remember that the Minister of Health advises that smoking is bad for your health.
Always was.
Yes, I just thought that I should plug that in. And also the new trend of vaping, there have been quite a few deaths associated with vaping. So there's no escape from smoking or vaping. We're trying to get our young people to understand that these habits that you develop in your teens and so on and so forth, they will come back to haunt mm-hmm. you.
Correct.
When you are in your 40s and 50s and 60s all the way up. So there are times when a lady has all of these plans and pregnancy is interrupted. She goes into labor. Mm-hmm. Again, we're going to talk about the signs of labor. What are the signs of labor?
Right. Usually, they might be in asymptomatic. Very, very commonly, sometimes, like if you have an incompetent cervix, you might not get any signs.
Okay, so let's go back to incompetent cervix, because I really do want our listeners to get a full picture of what can possibly go wrong to cause somebody to go into early labor. So the cervix is actually, because from the definition that we said before, mm-hmm. that labor is the onset of these regular contractions leading to the cervix getting shorter and wider.
And wider and dilated.
And it makes sense, so that the baby's head can pass through, because the whole head can't get through a shut cervix.
Correct.
Right, so incompetent cervix. How does that come about?
Right. Sometimes the cervix is composed of muscular and fibrous tissue. So sometimes the cervix doesn't keep shut for the whole duration of the pregnancy until they go into labor. And that could be due to intrinsic weakness in the actual cervix itself. But most of the time it's painless. So for argument's sake, if you come in for like a vaginal discharge and the doctor then puts in a speculum, open up the speculum, see the cervix, and then see membranes. Yeah. So it all depends on the gestation of the actual pregnancy. So that's one cause. The other causes would be like usually people will come in with intermittent lower abdominal pain. They may have some bleeding. They might have a show, or they might have what you call like a gushy fluid, which goes to the membranes being ruptured, and then they start getting pain. And on the other hand, if you get the real life threatening aspects of preterm labor, would be what you call your abruption of placenta, whereby you get a bleed separating the afterbirth from the actual muscle
wall
of the uterus. Mm-hmm. And that can predispose you to preterm labor, but that becomes life threatening depending on the actual amount of blood that is coming out, because sometimes you can see blood and sometimes you can't see blood, which is a concealed abruption.
All right, we have a question here on WhatsApp, so we'll answer this question. Somebody's asking if preeclampsia is also the luck of the draw. This person had two pregnancies, and both pregnancies were the same thing. She managed to save the second child, and as soon as the baby was viable, she was delivered. And this baby that she's talking about is now an adult, and the daughter is actually very afraid that she might have preeclampsia.
Yeah, usually the preeclampsia would get worse with every subsequent pregnancy as well. Sometimes, however, depending on how bad it is, because usually you only get the preeclampsia after 20 weeks, yeah? But sometimes some people might have kidney problems before and then high blood pressure, so they're at greater risk. So these pregnancies, when you're like before 24 weeks, if you actually have bad preeclampsia, then we try to get them up to viability. Viability depends on where you are. So say like if you're in UK, where I practice, that's 24 weeks. If you're in Barbados, then that's between 26, 28 weeks. So we try to get you up to where there's a good chance for baby. But yes, she would be at risk for preeclampsia again, and her family as well.
Her daughter would be at risk for preeclampsia.
Especially if she's hypertensive or diabetic, the actual risk of preeclampsia increases.
And then this is another plug for actually just being in generally good health,
yes, please,
even before you start pregnancy. I actually read something the other day that said that half of all pregnancies are unplanned.
Yes.
I remember one of my, we were in gynae clinic, I think it was, and one of my consultants, we were talking with a young couple or a young female, can't remember, but the question was, so what are you using for contraception? And she said, nothing. So his next question was, what do you call two people who are sexually active on no contraception?
Baby.
Parents. Right. You call them parents. And I will forever remember the expression on the young lady's face, because in her mind, that was not a possibility. Yeah, yeah, of course not. Yeah. I can't get pregnant.
Nature has it.
Well, it has, you know, a very funny way of catching us by surprise. So let's just say that there is a particular lady who was going all along, and then she has had her pregnancy interrupted by preterm labor. Mm-hmm. I know it might seem like a silly question, but believe you me, I have learned in medicine that there is no such thing as a silly question. No. What is your advice, Dr. Barker, obstetrician gynecologist, for a woman who finds herself getting labor pains before the baby's due?
Always call delivery suite and you come in, because it's better to come in and let me take 5-10 minutes to examine you properly, do an ultrasound scan, do all my examinations until you go home, rather than you're at home and then when you come in it's too late and you can only do so much, because timing is everything. Early presentation is key, and sometimes you might only have a window like 12 hours if so much, depending on when you come in to get steroids.
We have a call. Let's take this call and then we'll go back to our questions. Mm-hmm. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening, Doc, to you and your guests.
Good evening.
Yes, good afternoon.
I would like to ask this question. Mm-hmm. We have discussed babies on this gynecological issue. Now, what would cause, we're dealing now with the mother. Mm-hmm. What would cause the mother to die during child delivery? Or what kind of complications can cause a mother to die
Okay.
During child delivery.
Okay. A mother dying is one of the worst things that can happen. And there are multiple causes as to why you can get a maternal death. The first one, the most common one, actually in labor, like what we call intrapartum, would be like bleeding. Yeah. Fortunately, once your obstetric service are quite developed, we have medication that would contract your womb, try to decrease your bleeding. But bleeding is one of the most common causes of maternal death, because although when you're pregnant, your body physiologically dilutes, so you have more blood, so you're able to lose more blood than a normal adult. You understand? So you have about 3.5 more liters. So you can lose a bit more blood than normal and still survive. But sometimes it's like a cliff. Once you get to a certain level, then that's it. No matter how much products and stuff we give you, in terms of you, well, if you survive, then sometimes you can have what you call increased morbidity, like other stuff, like decreased blood flow to your brain and stuff. So it's very serious if you die in labor. Sometimes you can have a heart attack in labor. Not common, but it can happen. I've only seen about two in my career, which is about 20 years, yeah. Sometimes you can get something called amniotic fluid embolism. This is a very dangerous position whereby the liquid, the liquor or the amniotic fluid gets into your bloodstream, and it causes an anaphylactic reaction, like if you're allergic to a certain substance. So essentially what you get is an anaphylactic shock, and that is what actually takes you out. So there's nothing that you can do except to put you in ITU, intensive care, and just do supportive therapy. Very rarely you can get an aneurysm, like when you're pushing and the aneurysm actually ruptures. Those are not common, but so, they can happen.
So, Doc, so what would be the advice then for young ladies that is going into the labor room or when they're going through the period of pregnancy?
Mm-hmm.
What would be your advice to them of the possibilities?
Right, so essentially that comes into identifying your medical problems pre-pregnancy. So like if you have any heart problems, if you have any neurological issues, sometimes you can have bleeding disorders like sickle cell and stuff. What we try to do is to make sure that these medical problems are adequately treated by a multidisciplinary team, which would be like your cardiologist and your neurologist, because sometimes you can have like epilepsy, and sometimes you can get a fit and you don't come out with the fit. Yeah, so you have to actually get like your neurologist, make sure that your medication is properly given to you,
administered,
right? But it's just in terms of your care to get everybody in to actually make sure that whatever your disorder is, your medical disorder, get that treated. In terms of labor itself, in terms of the bleeding itself, it's not only the obstetrician that will save the woman. It would be like the anaesthetist. The anaesthetist is very important, because if not for your anaesthetist, the anaesthetist is what keeps the lady alive until you can actually stop the bleeding. And the hematologist as well, because he will have to release blood products and stuff from the lab. So, and then to all the midwives and stuff that will be running about trying to get bloods taken off, trying to take care of the patient as well, because it's all a rapid sequence in terms of events. Sometimes you can lose half your blood supply in less than 10 minutes. So, you know, let me
finish out here by asking this last question.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many kinds of ways that a lady can give birth to, to a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I would want to describe two. Pardon?
Yeah, they're only two.
Well, in water.
But that's still vaginal.
No, that's still vaginal. So it's only vaginal or by cesarean section, yeah?
Right.
You can do it normally or you can do it in water, that's called a water birth.
Right, that's what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And that is why, listening to you guys, that is why I say that all men should love women, even policemen.
Yes.
Chief. Yes, please.
I feel a little bit offended, though.
Why?
That you say that you went to all the parishes except St. Andrew and St. Joseph. I live in St. Andrew, and I feel offended.
No,
I think that the first parish you should have gone to after going through St. Peter would have been to St. Andrew.
But that would have been a circuitous route. So since I'm trying to do my best to save the planet and not use gas unnecessarily, I chose to leave out St. Andrew and St. Joseph on this trip.
Yeah.
But I will, right, I will come to St. Andrew. Don't worry.
Thank you, Gregson.
Yes, sir.
Good evening, sir.
You have a good evening, my friend.
You okay, have a good afternoon.
Take care. All right.
So the important thing is that we need to be in the best of health even before you get before you become pregnant. So all women of childbearing age, whether or not you're trying to have a child right now, should be on folic acid and try to be as healthy as possible. It seems as though we have another call. So what we'll do, we'll take this call and then take a break. So let's take this call. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening. Two questions.
Sure. One, go ahead.
How sex while being pregnant, is it good or bad? Two, could your doctor explain what causes your child to be anencephalic? And how can you discover it before the full term is completed? Thank you.
Right. Sex is always good. No.
I am going to say, right, I am the only female here in the studio. And what I just saw was two big smiles, right? Two big smiles.
I was reacting to the fact that you always have these off-the-wall reactions when statements like these are made.
I don't have any off-the-wall reactions.
No, when Dr. Emptage is here.
No, Dr. Emptage is in the class by himself.
Carry on, Doc.
Yeah, sex is always good. In terms of pregnancy, you try not to overdo everything, huh? Because sometimes the semen can cause very strong contractions, and then sometimes you may actually have to admit some people because the contractions are actually quite intense. But usually you don't actually go into labor from that. Now, the next question will be an anencephalic baby. Now, usually what happens is that the brain doesn't form normally, and these are usually picked up prior to the 12-week scan. So essentially, if the patient is getting the 12-week dating scan and the anatomy scan, then they shouldn't actually go to term because this is a very obvious abnormality.
It's not compatible with, in some cases.
What's it called again?
Anencephaly. So that's when the baby's top of the brain doesn't form on the bones. So essentially, it has half of a head.
So we have another success story here just before we take our break. It says, this person says, I had a premature son. He is now 34 and he was born at 27 weeks. So I'm guessing that this person is completely normal and this is a success story for those persons who are listening who might have had lost. There is always the opportunity to try again. To see what would happen. So we're going to take our break and then we'll come back and we'll discuss a little bit more about preterm labor. Remember, you're listening to the Better Health Radio Show. We're discussing preterm labor with Dr. John Barker.
Be sure to tune in with June Clark for travel tips, info on 2020 and 2021 group tours and cruises, and of course a general travel chit-chat in the Travel House Half Hour this Monday at 2:30 p.m.
Primary school action is in full stride, and now the secondary schools are getting into the act during this year's athletic season. We bring you Trackside with Knapsack coverage on Life 97.5 FM, while the BSAC action is about to take center stage on VOB. It's all in association with our valued partners, the National HIV/AIDS Commission. I choose to wait. I'm worth it. ICBL, always there when you need us most. Protect, work, sports, and your everyday orthopedic needs. Distributed by AA Lachise and Esso Loading Road Service Station. Rep your school, earn money for your school when you fuel up at the Esso Loading Road Service Station.
So you hear a win or a loss, they are what?
Champion. 23 and a half now before the hour of 7 o'clock. Good to hear the gentleman calling in and asking questions. Let's go back to the good doctor.
Welcome back to the Better Health Radio Show. We were discussing with Dr. John Barker all about preterm labor. So we're going to discuss now how is it diagnosed. We spoke about the symptoms of labor, but how would you as the obstetrician diagnose preterm labor?
Right. So the first thing from the history that we want to know is the frequency, the intensity of the contractions. Then we want to know, for argument's sake, if you have any urinary tract symptoms like burning, When you pass V, or if you have lower loin pain, which would be lower pain in your back, which is dull in nature, to see if you have a kidney infection. Then we ask about if you have any bleeding or if you have any gush of clear fluid, which would mean that you query abruption, query the mucus plug, or the fluid would be if the membranes have gone. Now, once we take the history, we examine you, so we feel your tummy. We see if it's soft, if it's hard. Sometimes you can get, if you get the bleeding inside your tummy, the abdomen is very rigid and hard, and that is a telltale sign that you might have an abruption, which whereby the uterus is very irritable. When we then pass a speculum now, what we look for is if you have any fluid coming out, which can mean that your membranes have gone. And then we look at the cervix. Now the cervix can be closed or the cervix can be open, and then sometimes you can see like a bag of membranes. The best way to describe it is you know the roll-on deodorant, or how the roll-on deodorant looks at the top, especially if you got clear roll-on deodorant and then you got your ridge around it. Mm-hmm. The clear ball would be the membranes bulging out, and then the rim would be the cervix.
Would be the cervix. Yes. Oh, that's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Because it helps you to picture.
Picture it, yeah. If, however, the neck of the womb is closed, what we do in the tertiaries overseas is that we do a test called fibronectin. The fibronectin is a test which is actually performed, and it can either be negative or positive. Now, fibronectin is a chemical which is found in the membranes in the membranes, and is not released before 34 weeks. So, if this chemical is found prior to 34 weeks, it means that you have a increased risk of delivery in 2 weeks. However, if you have a negative fibronectin test, what this means is that the probability of you going into labor is less than 0.01%. So the actual, what we call the predictive value would be, it is very high if you have a negative result. It is available in Barbados. I think I'm the only one that does it.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the next thing would be transvaginal scanning. If anybody looks in the actual vagina itself, everything is subjective, meaning that if we look at the neck of the womb, I would say, well, it's 2 centimeters long, 1 centimeter dilated, but I don't actually have a ruler measuring, right? So it's all subjective. Whereas if you use an ultrasound scan, this would be a transvaginal scan.
So you can actually insert the scan into the vagina.
Insert. And then what we measure would be the length of the cervix. Now, when we do the scan, we can find the length of the cervix, and we can essentially see if you have what you call funneling. Now, funneling is like if you have a funnel, you know, like you put oil in the car, right? If you see funneling on the scan, which is essentially the top of the cervix getting ready to dilate, because it dilates from inside first and then comes down, yeah? Once we see that, and if the actual length of your cervix is, well, we use two centimeters, but sometimes people can use 15 millimeters. But when it gets to 15 millimeters, it definitely means that you're on your way. But it might take a while before it gets from like 2 to 15 millimeters. So as a result of the transvaginal scanning, we actually triage you better with that transvaginal scanning and the fibronectin test. And that's how you would make a educated, evidence-based decision as to whether to give steroids, one, and two, to actually administer what we call torcolytics. Torcolytics would be chemicals that actually stop the uterus from contracting. Mm-hmm. They don't improve outcome because you will deliver, right? But the steroids is what actually dramatically improves outcome, because one dose of steroid it actually decreases your time in the special care baby unit. Now, once we have positive findings for the speculum, fibronectin test, or the ultrasound test, then the next thing that we have to do is to try and buy time to give you the steroids. So that's why we give you the torcolytics, which would be nifedipine. And nifedipine is a drug that will stop the actual uterus from contracting, thereby giving time for the steroids to work. Now, usually we like you to get in at least 2 steroids.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, depending on where you're practicing, they like to leave 24 hours, but sometimes we get them in 12 hours because we know that delivery is imminent. And then if we think delivery is imminent, one of the latest evidence-based treatments in relation to decreasing what we discussed before, the morbidity, would be to give you a medication called magnesium sulfate. This is the same drug that we use in severe preeclamptics, but the magnesium sulfate use in preterm labor is to decrease the bleeding in the brain, and it stabilizes the brain, so your risk of cerebral palsy is actually decreased. So that's the latest thing within the last 2 to 5 years, because before we would have given the tocolysis and the steroids, but now we add magnesium sulfate. And that improves the outcome.
We have a question here on WhatsApp. It says, after a full day of labor for a lady who's having her first pregnancy, a near 5-pound fibroid was discovered. This person is asking if this is going to have any long-term effect on the baby. So far, so good. And what causes a fibroid, and how can a fibroid of that size go undetected?
She's pregnant still, or she?
It doesn't look that way. It says all is well to date, so I figured okay. That.
All right. Essentially, most black women, most people of African descent, African Caribbean descent, will have fibroids. It's genetic. Essentially, what it is a benign tumor that grows. Now, the problem is that is what we call estrogen dependent. So when you have a lot of estrogens floating about and a lot of hormones, they get bigger. So sometimes you might have a very small fibroid, and then it just increases in size throughout the pregnancy. Sometimes it can outgrow its blood supply, and it gets very painful, and that's called red degeneration. Sometimes it may even have to get admitted to hospital. And then too, it all depends on how many scans you had, because sometimes the fibroid might grow rapidly in the last trimester. So I can't say why it was missed, because then I don't know, for argument's sake, if you had ultrasound scans or not. So it would actually be in my best interest to say, somebody missed it, etc., because I don't know the actual particulars of the case.
Yeah, so we can't speak about what
right.
we don't know.
Right, so I can't really talk. But usually, sometimes it can get a very small fibroid that actually increases in size, and that's due to the hormones causing this increase in growth. Sometimes the fibroids, depending on where they are, like if they're in the neck of the womb, they can actually obstruct labor. So therefore, you might go against a cesarean section, and there will be an increased risk of blood loss because of the fibroid as well.
For a couple who have unfortunately had fetal loss as a result of preterm labor,
mm-hmm.
In counseling them, when would you say would be, physiologically speaking, in terms of the body, not emotionally speaking, but speaking of anatomy, when would be a good time for them to try pregnancy again?
Well, the answer to that question would be what you say not to say.
I didn't say not to say anything. You go right ahead.
No. Right. It all depends on the psychological aspect, yeah, because you'll be grieving and stuff, mm-hmm. yeah. Everybody's coping mechanisms are quite different. Some people will be pregnant within 2-3 months, depending. But my advice would be to get pregnant when you're actually mentally ready, and when you think that your body is ready, right? Now, when you have a loss, what I would suggest, even if you don't want the service, would be to talk to a psychologist, right? That's one of the reasons why I incorporate a psychologist in everything that I do, because at the end of the day, you can't really see mental health problems. And if you get on top of it earlier, then your recovery is much quicker. Now, as long as we find out the cause for your preterm labor, when you actually get reviewed after your delivery, like I run specialist preterm delivery clinic. So what we look at would be the cause for your preterm labor. So sometimes your membranes can go. Sometimes you think it's an incompetent cervix. What we do is that we will counsel you based on what we find, your risk of preterm labor in your next pregnancy. You'll be at higher risk for that. Depending on if you went into preterm labor before 34 weeks or, if you went into preterm labor before 34 weeks, And if you had a pregnancy loss between 16 and 24 weeks, then what we would advise you to do is either to use vaginal progesterone, yeah, because that would decrease your chances of preterm labor, or get a cervical cyclage. If, however, if you had one,
you know what I'm gonna ask
and not
you.
The other, then you should consider counseling them, which is completely different from when I was a junior, because we used to do a lot of cervical cyclages. And then when I went to the UK, I realized that they didn't used to do
as many.
Not as many, 99% less.
Wow.
So for me, I was dumbfounded as to why there was the variation. So it's when you said, well, in terms of evidence-based medicine and stuff, if for argument's sake, we think that you had a loss and stuff, what we would do now is scan you like around 14, 16, 18 weeks, 24 weeks, and we do what you call cervical length scanning, just to see if the cervix is less than 25 millimeters, 25 or less. If the cervix is less than 25 millimeters, then we put in the stitch. If it's 25 or less, or like by the time you actually do the scans, like if you do them every 2 or 3 weeks apart, it's very unlikely that the person will go into labor within a week, but you will actually see the decrease in the cervical length. So even if it's more than 25, but it comes from like 4 to 3, then you know you gotta put in a stitch. You ain't gotta say about
it. Right, I was just about to ask you what is a cervical cerclage?
Right, a cervical cerclage is essentially like a piece of ribbon, suture, that we put at the in the cervix itself, and is a mechanical method to stop the cervix from dilating. And this would actually prolong your pregnancy. Even if you're having a stitch, it doesn't mean that you wouldn't go into preterm labor. Actually, unfortunately, if you're having a stitch and you're going to preterm labor, we gotta take the stitch out, because what happens is that it will cause a what we call a bucket tear, because it's like me like tying a, if you're putting a stitch in a piece of cloth and you pull it, you know, like how it tears like a U kind of. So that would be like a bucket tear, and those bleed like crazy. So sometimes if you're having a stitch, yes, the progesterone, what the progesterone does is prevent the uterus from contracting. So the more progesterone that is there, that's where you give it. Versus, before there was some controversy with progesterone in terms of recurrent miscarriages, but we don't, well, in the UK, they don't give progesterone for that indication. The only indication that we give the progesterone for would be the preterm labor.
All right, we've got 9 minutes left. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the police officer took 10 minutes out of our time. So we have 9 minutes
Doc, you
left.
Want back your 10 minutes, Doc?
No, that's quite okay.
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely sure.
All right. He doesn't know what he did.
Anywho, let's summarize, John. This has been partly a technical conversation, because unless you have that background in medicine, there might have been some things that might not have been understood. So we'll go.
Before you start to summarize with Dr. Barker,
yes.
There's a question I want to pose to you. I heard you mention a good set of drugs that you use with aiding in delivery of women doing the delivering babies. You mentioned steroids and all that. My question to you is, this is current, present. What was the procedure, let's say in 1960? These drugs were also present? These AIDS were also present? Because I doubt it very much. You can help me on that.
Right. The steroids, I think, were developed just by accident, because there was a doctor who was... I think there was a farmer or a veterinarian that was dealing with sheep, if I remember correctly. And when they give steroids, he realized that they were doing well. So then they converted it to giving it to humans. So that's how, that is the single most important thing for neonatal medicine in terms for obstetrics. Yeah. Before the nifedipine and the other drugs, we used to use a drug called Ritodrine. And that was from like 97 or 97 when I first came to QEH. So we used to use that before. But in the last 10 years or so, it has switched to nifedipine and some more expensive drugs. But in the last 15, 20 years or so, the actual rate for like saving these babies is much higher than it was like 40 years ago. Yeah.
So when they hear what people say that a woman giving birth, she's at death's door.
Yep, one foot in, one foot out. You can understand why now.
Now I can.
Yeah.
So let's go over quickly the definition of term. How many weeks for a term pregnancy?
Right. Well, once you do term, it's 37 to 42. Yeah. In terms of your due date is 40 weeks. All right. And the reason why we like to deliver you before 42 weeks would be to decrease your issues with your baby and stillbirth. In terms of preterm labor, early diagnosis is key, because what we need to do is get the steroids in. So the earlier you present, the more time, the more opportunity we have to get the best outcome for baby. In terms of diagnosis, yes, we use speculums and stuff. That is good. What we need to do now is to increase the diagnostics with transvaginal scanning and stuff. And then what that would do would be to pick up these people much earlier. And then in relation to picking them up earlier, as well, would be to actually, if you have a lady that you know is at severe, increased risk of preterm labor, you can actually have specialized clinics like the ones that I do, that you see them from the time that they conceive to 24 weeks. And then that, once you do those type of specialized clinics, you actually diagnose people at higher risk, and you actually institute management much earlier than normal, because it's all about prevention. Well, prevention and trying to decrease the incidence.
And what is the use of steroids in these situations? I remember when people hear steroids, they automatically think bodybuilding.
No. These steroids are to mature the baby lungs. The problem is that if the lungs aren't mature, then you get all the issues with the lungs not developing properly and stuff. And then it gives the baby the best fighting chance in relation to intensive care.
What is the expected time for a pregnancy test to go from positive to negative in terms of having had a loss?
It varies. Sometimes you can repeat it in 2 weeks. But I wouldn't get too worried. And it also too depends on if it's an early pregnancy or not, because sometimes you can miscarry, and then if you repeat the pregnancy test, it would be a bit high. So we usually say 2-3 weeks. Sometimes if we do the pregnancy test like after delivery, like a month or two, and it's still high, but we know you're not pregnant, then very rarely you can have what you call a hydatidiform mole.
Oh yeah, I remember.
Yeah, which is like a tumor.
A tumor.
So those are very rare. I know last day I see one, but they are
which
common.
Is a good thing.
Yeah, they are common, but you can't see them.
Okay. I got some messages to give some people some shout outs. So before you do your last summary, I am going to say hello to Isla Thompson. This is an elderly lady who said that she listens to the show every Sunday. And I also have to send a shout out to the mom of one of my colleagues, Dr. Holder. Her mom also listens as well every week. And to Annette Pilgrim. This is another reminder that I just got to say hello, and we really do want to say thank you to these persons who have been tuning into the Better Health Radio show and who have been telling other people about it, because these persons go and they tell their neighbors and friends to join in and listen to the Better Health Radio show. So John, in these last few minutes, you tell me what you want, or tell our listeners actually, what is the one, let's give you two things that you want them to take away with respect to preterm labor.
Early diagnosis. Anybody, no matter how trivial you think it is, you call your delivery suite and then they will tell you if to come in. Because most of the time, if the contractions get regular and stuff, you have to come in. Don't be at home thinking,
all right,
be two Panadols or it will pass and stuff. You never know. And sometimes when you get bad outcomes, most people tell you is that, you know, they were like this for a few days, and then you're like, but when you ain't coming, oh, because this body tell me this. So my thing is to let her, as soon as you got any issues that you know aren't normal, you come in. And the next thing is that if you had a previous preterm delivery, it's actually see someone that has an interest in it so that they can optimize your care in relation to when you get pregnant, what are your plans and stuff. And the thing is that when you do it, is the evidence-based medicine that you practice. If I tell you, well, this is what I do, and I can't give you a reason for it, then that's not evidence-based. That is actually level just 4 evidence. Yeah, that's just my load. And my opinion would only be of value when there's no other evidence out there. So my opinion in the absence of any evidence is level 4 evidence. So that's the lowest evidence. So if there's no other evidence on what I'm talking about, then I talk about my opinion, because that is the highest grade of evidence. But if I have evidence from a trial that they did, a large trial and stuff, then that's the best evidence that you use. So usually anything that I do or anybody does, they should have a reason as to why they do it. And not only a reason as to why they do it, but it should be the latest evidence as to why you do it. You understand me?
I understand completely. We hope our listeners also understand. We want to thank you again, John, for taking time out of your busy schedule to come sit, have a chat with us here on the Bed Health Radio Show. Our show next week is going to be
glaucoma.
Yes, we have Dr. Dawn Grosvenor. She's going to come in because I think glaucoma week is the following week. So she's going to come in and share some, get this, insight. I couldn't resist it. It just popped into my head. Some insight on glaucoma. So we're looking forward to that. So remember, 6 to 7 every Sunday here on VOB 92.9, the Better Health Radio Show. So you can listen out for that, Dr. Dawn Grosvenor with glaucoma next week. As usual, it has been my pleasure, and looking forward to being here with you again next week.
All right. Thank you so much, Doc. That's Dr. Renee Boyce. Her guest today was Dr. John Barker. And, of course, we are going to come back with you next week, Sunday, without any events, we promise, or can we promise. I don't think we can promise, but we'll come back again next weekend with another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. Thank you, Doc. Thank you, Doc.
Thank you.
Never a problem.
And have yourselves a wonderful week.